Yo, what's good, fam? Welcome to Dharma Glow. We are lighting the path to liberation and showing you how to pursue your purpose with passion so you can live a life that leaves a legacy of love. Glad to have you tapped in here. If you want to dive deeper with Dharma Glow and what we got cooking, you can head on over to our website, dharmaglow.com. Hit us on IG at Dharma Glow. There you will find events we have coming up, like all-day music and wellness experiences like the Glow Up. You'll also find our self-transformation programs like the Radiant Rising Rituals that get you electric, ever-renewable energy in the morning, and other cool events like silent disco, yoga, and stuff like that. So we're glad to have you here. If you like this vibe and you want to help us spread the energy, wherever you're listening, please give us a 5-star review. Share with the homies, and now sit back, relax, and enjoy the episode. What's good, peace family? I trust everyone is having a blessed day. I'm here with my new friend, Iyana Carpenter. Welcome.
Thank you.
We got introduced through our mutual friend, Koya Webb, and Iyana is just a lovely spirit. She was a pleasure to be around. We shared a meal together. And she also shared her music. She's got a great voice. And then later, when we were reaching out afterwards and connecting, she shared with me her platform, She Who Builds. And she was inviting me to connect with an elder who was teaching a cool perspective. But I realized that you were the architect of this community, She Who Builds, and I just wanted to hear more about it. And obviously you do multiple things with the creativity and all that. So I just was like, let me get her on here to talk her talk.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here. And yeah, I feel like it's going to be a very beautiful conversation. So I'm excited about it.
Right on. So first, maybe you could share what She Who Builds is and also how it came to be.
Okay, Carpenter.
So you cut out for 1 second there. Could you say that part again?
Oh, no. I was saying that. I was living in Chicago. I was working as an interim executive director for a youth camp for girls. And I was in a very interesting space. So 2010, I hadn't turned 30 yet. So it was 2 years before my 30th birthday. And I was just in this very interesting space, entering my Saturn return and figuring out, okay, what am I doing? What am I here to do? And I had so many things that I was interested in. I'm a musician. I love working with youth. And there was also this desire to start working more with women. And I'm a writer as well. So there were just a lot of different experiences that wanted to express through me. And I felt pulled in all these different directions. And so I remember in my studio apartment in Chicago asking, I was like, what is all of this about? What am I doing? What am I here to do? What am I here to bring? What am I supposed to be doing? What is all of this leading to? And what I heard so clearly was She Who Builds. Like, She Who Builds. So I wrote it down and then I like wrote my name and it was like Carpenter, She Who Builds, Carpenter, She Who Builds. And it just made sense. And I was like, oh, I'm living my last name. And so that was the initial start of She Who Builds, was the planting of that seed and me realizing the connection to my last name. And so I got excited about it. I ended up having a friend, or actually a soror, to create a logo for me. And then I, like most people do, I put the logo on a shirt. And I, at the time, I had published my second book and I was at a women's conference and I had my shirt on, She Who Builds. And what happened was that a lot of women were coming up to me and they were like, I love that shirt. I love your shirt. Can I buy your shirt? And I was like, oh, I only have this one. But it gave me an idea that there are women who really connected with this message of She Who Builds, even though they didn't know what it was, just the fact that it said She Who Builds, women connected. Oh, and this was like around 2012, 2013, because by this point I had moved to California. And then I just started putting the pieces together. And I've always loved creating and holding spaces for women and young girls. And at the time I was working with the organization specifically with Girls Incorporated of Orange County. I worked down there as a program facilitator. And so I was already doing the work, but I was like, okay, let me create spaces outside of my job that supports women. And initially built an online community via Facebook and was just posting inspirational stuff. And then in 2016, ended up having my first retreat in Atlanta, She Who Builds Spring Into Being Retreat. And it was very powerful. And then after that retreat, I just hit the standstill because I was like, okay, I feel like this wants to be something more, but I'm not clear on where to go with it. And so I took a pause. And then in 2019, I heard that I needed to revive She Who Builds. And so now She Who Builds is pretty much a community. It's a platform. It's growing. It's a growing community and platform with the mission and vision of supporting women and going confidently in the direction of their dreams and building the life they imagine. So I do this through monthly workshops that I call the Toolbox Series sessions, where we focus on spiritual, mental, emotional, physical, creative, and financial well-being. And I have different women practitioners who facilitate on a different topic for the month. And I also host quarterly retreats called A Day of Play, where right now the focus is for women, but it's a day where we are able to disconnect from all the fray, the stress, our day-to-day lives, and to reconnect with our joy, our passion, our creativity, our enthusiasm, and all set in a beautiful, picturesque environment of nature. And it's expanding from there. So that's a little bit about She Who Builds.
Wow, that's very powerful. I love that it was like an idea that poked its head through. Mm-hmm. And then there was this excitement and just organically built. And then there was an unveiling and then going back underground and then coming back out. And I think that's an important thing to hear, because everything doesn't always come at once. Sometimes it takes some patience, some devotion. Sometimes you have a vision, and that could be something that's going to happen well off in the future. You just hold the vision and let the vision come to you and explain how it wants to express itself. And I feel like that's a beautiful example of you doing that. And I love it. And I've been in the container that you've created, and it was great. Everyone in there was high vibrational. You could just tell where they were coming from, if they were in their hearts and also open to learn. So congratulations on creating that.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's exciting. But you know, it's funny because I can appreciate those moments of going under and not knowing where to take She Who Builds now. But when I was in it, I was struggling because I'm given this vision, I'm given access and a peek of it. And I'm like, I'm ready to build this thing. Let's go. And the years in between, I actually dealt with a lot of guilt. And I was just like, oh, I started this community. And then I went on hold. I went underground. Who does that? Did I lose the momentum? Did I lose some of the women who were initially part of it? And I was starting to hear from some people like, you just disappeared. And I had explained to them what was going on. I just didn't know at the time which direction to go in. And it's very interesting, the timing of when things started revving back up. I had just come back from Egypt. I had went twice in 2019. And I want to say towards the end of 2019, the first week of 2020 was when She Who Builds started coming back. And I started literally sketching out the Toolbox Series session. And spiritually, I knew something was coming. I couldn't tell you it was a pandemic. I couldn't tell you it was a lockdown. I just had this strong urge to start building this template and having this offering available. It was funny because in February of 2020, I did an in-person event at a spot in Los Angeles, Love 632, and it was a sound immersion kind of experience where my friend did sound bowls and I did the drum circle, and then we guided everyone through a meditation, and we had one planned for March 19th. And literally within that month, everything, and next thing we're in a lockdown, so I had to cancel that second event. So I had to transfer everything online. And I had already started building out this template to offer it. So it was just a matter of trusting what was happening. And so It's really interesting when I look back, I'm like, I wasn't meant for me to be saying much in 2017, 18, because I was going through some serious deep work for myself. And when I look back, I couldn't have held space for anybody during that time, because I was growing through my own. I was growing so that I could be a better container, a better space holder, a space keeper, and just a clear channel for what was already birthed through me, but also what was desiring greater expression through me. Yeah, but when I was in it, I dealt with all of the emotions of guilt and remorse and shame and failure and every word you could think of. But now looking back, I'm like, oh yeah, this makes sense.
Yeah, learning how to trust the process, you know, because creation is a natural process. Creation is a process that happens in all of nature. And yes. it's not always springtime.
No.
Right. There's all the seasons. Sometimes things are dying. Sometimes things are dormant and asleep. And I feel like our own souls have their own process, cyclical process of getting inspired in the gestation period and then the birthing period and then the living and the death. And that's for everything that lives goes through that cycle. So what I've learned in that process is to embrace all the parts and also to be aware of the emotions that are coming up, because we're human and we're going to have a spectrum of emotions. But when it's emotions like shame or guilt, a lot of those are self-inflicted that we're usually conditioned to feel, or we have no reference for some other way to choose to interact. But now that I've been on this path for longer, I know the power of gratitude and appreciation and just rest. Are like trying to be still so I can consciously make decisions to shift my state of frequency so that I'm not beating myself up for not doing what my mind thinks I should do and aligning more closely with what is actually happening.
Yes. Something that I learned during that time, because that was my initial experience. So 2017, I tell people, is the dark year of my soul. And that was when all of that feeling of guilt was coming up. But one of the things I learned during that time, because that's when I started studying with Brother Ishmael Tete, who you had a chance to meet and interact with. But that's when I really began to understand emotions in a way that I hadn't up until that point. And I realized, so where I'm at now with all of the lower vibrational emotions, whether it's jealousy, shame, guilt, fear, et cetera, is that all of it has information to give me. All of it's purposeful. So what was a saving grace for me, and now I just approach it totally differently now. So when I'm feeling these emotions, I'm like, oh, okay, it has information. So what is it that you want to teach me? And when I started asking those emotions, asking myself when I was in those emotions, those questions, like, clearly there is something that you're here to bring me, that you're here to show me. What is it? And when it comes to, let's use jealousy for an example. So when I would get this like fire, when I see someone see something on social media and I'm starting to compare myself and go through all the stuff. And what always came up for me during that time was there was something in me that wanted my attention, that wanted me to create, or something that I wasn't following through on that I knew to follow up on. So when jealousy was arising, it wasn't that I was jealous of that person. It was because, okay, mirror for me that there's something in me that wants to be expressed. So it's appearing as jealousy, but really it has this messaging for me. And once I discovered what my emotions were really telling me, even with guilt or shame, I was like, oh, it was an invitation for me to be more generous with myself. It was an invitation for me to be gentle and stop comparing myself and to really, again, like you said, going back into the fact that everything is cyclical. And I had to, that's when I realized that at that time I was in a winter. I was in the winter of my life, yet I was wanting it to be spring. Right. And it was very, but I would not have received that information had I not started asking my soul, asking my emotions those questions, because I feel that emotions, they're the way the soul communicates. It's a part of it. And so I was like, oh, so now I tell people, I was like, I'm still in the first few weeks or months of my spring. I feel like around the end of 2019, 2020 was when I stepped into the spring season of my life, and I'm seeing it. And yet, even with spring, there's not this instant growth. Things are starting to open. They're starting to bloom and blossom, but they're not, it's not summer for me yet. And so even understanding that has been one of the, it's like I extend grace to myself, I extend grace to other people, because I'm like, we all out here in different seasons, and it's a folly for us to compare ourselves with others. But again, I didn't have this information 10 years ago. So I'm grateful for the years in between where I was able to receive this information and just be able to check in and tap in this way. So, yeah.
Yeah, Ashe. Everyone's journey is so unique. I think that what you just described is the healthy way to interact with emotions, because it's like we don't want to be on either extreme of denying emotions, because we came here to have our human experience, but we also don't want to be overwhelmed and lost in our emotions, where you can't tell the difference between a temporary sensation or experience and who you actually are. And I think when we get lost is when we become reactive and act out and project, which I know I've done, we've all done. Yeah. And I feel like the awakening process is when you start to create space in between the emotions, where you can go in and ask the questions that you're talking about and say, what is this communicating to me? What's the information here? What is there to learn? As opposed to just like a button being pushed and then a reaction happening.
Yeah. Absolutely. I love that you say that, because when I'm working with people, when I'm talking to friends or even myself, because I talk to myself a lot, and I'm very mindful that I'm not spiritual bypassing or I'm trying to positivize myself out of a situation or think positive, like, no. And I tell people, I was like, I give myself a day to be upset, but I get quiet too. So if I know I'm in a funk or if I know I'm moving through something, I intentionally withdraw, because I don't want to, like you say, be reactive, right? But I also, I tell people, I was like, I give whatever is coming up for me time to come up. Because like you said, we Earth, from what we know, is one of the only planets and dimensions where we're able to experience emotions like this and experience it in our bodies and to have this experience. So I've learned, again, tying back again to what you said, is to embrace all of it. Like when I'm, and I have moments, like I said, I think we both turned 40 in the same month. And I don't know if I'm supposed to share that out loud, but I know I celebrated my 40th birthday at the end of April. And I was going through it. And I was telling people, I said, I am grieving. I am grieving. And I knew I was grieving. I was aware that I was grieving. And I didn't rush through that process. And I want to say, this last full moon, this full moon in Sagittarius, maybe a day or two leading into that full moon is when I started to feel like I was coming out of that grieving. So in that situation, I talked to the emotion and it told me what was happening, a lot of stuff that I needed to heal and complete on, but it wasn't going to be that something that I could transmute in one day. And so it was more so like a series of months of me moving through that. And so I'm right there with you, you know, eat some stuff. It takes more time to move through, and it's not to be rushed. It's to be felt, because there is a lot of gold that came up and that I excavated from that time of grieving. Honestly, I feel, although while I was moving through it, it didn't feel like it. It was very uncomfortable. And I felt like I was crying a lot. And just what came through and what revealed itself during that time is beyond, it's priceless. And yeah,
I can relate to that 100%. The most challenging and darkest times of my life is when I was exposed to the most indestructible, brightest parts of myself. And that's a blessing. And also what it does is prepare you for dark times in general, and to have a sense of inner calm when things happen. Mine happened the year before COVID. So by the time COVID happened, like I had already been like deep in the internal cave, like asking these existential questions and deepening my spiritual practices and all of these things. Just like in your preparatory time, I was in a better position to be a space holder and to lead people through certain dark emotions. And that's only increased because those same tools that I've learned have become consistent rituals. I was telling my friend that I haven't been doing it the past few days, but like maybe for a solid month or so, I was doing almost like 4 to 5 hours of my practice every day. And it wasn't like challenging, like I was enjoying it. I didn't want to leave the frequency of spiritual studies and chanting and breath work and yoga and like making my juice. It just all felt so good. But I feel like what we're here to do is to be the portal between heaven and earth, right? Like we receive the energy and ground it in and then live as awakened beings and provide those reflections for other people to meet us in that space, or to celebrate with other people like we're doing now, our journey of awakening, and be like, this is where I'm at on the path and I'm excited for the continued unfurling. And it's been real to get here, but here we are.
Yes. What's beautiful about that too is every level that we spiral up to or even spiral down to brings its own unique set of challenges we have to grow through. And so it's funny, I've gotten to the point, I'm not sure you probably can relate, where so I knew, like I said, 2017, I call that the dark year of my soul. So I was just in it. I was in it in 2017. But that was when I built my practice even stronger. And that's when I became more resilient. And so 2018, it was like, okay, things are shifting. But I told someone, I was like, I feel myself spiraling, like I'm moving up towards that next level of myself. I feel like I had been on that same rung for a while, but I was starting to spiral upward. And that had its own set of unique challenges that came with its time of adjustment. Cause I can tell, like, I'm not where I was 3 years ago, but I'm elevated, and it's like everything is new and I'm figuring it out and I'm getting my bearings and my footing in this, seeing what practices work in this particular season, what wants to be modified, what wants to be expanded, what wants to be released, what probably wants to come forth in a different way. Like, it's so interesting, like, even knowing that every time you spiral up within yourself, there's a whole nother unique set of experiences that you will have. And I think that also, again, gave me some grace with myself and with others, because there's never a moment where we're not growing in some way. And I was going to say something very specific to that. It'll come back to me. But yeah.
Yeah. Anything not growing is dead.
And Lauren, I heard Lauryn Hill say that in one of her songs too.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would love to talk about your music, and I feel like it's a good transition in the diversity of emotions that we were discussing, because in any piece of art, think about if a movie was quote unquote good vibes only, right? That'd be a boring ass movie. Like, there has to be conflict in it, in the character overcoming the conflict and reaching a new level of transcendence, which makes the story worth taking in, right? Like, I feel like the reason why we exist is to experience transcendence. We have a obstacle and we encounter resistance, and then we overcome the obstacle and recognize how powerful we are. And then another obstacle comes, it's even harder than the one before, because then you have to recognize how strong you are in relation to that new obstacle. I think the same thing is true in all art. Like, the more diversity of emotion that you have, like in an album, like if every song on an album was like a pop dance hit, I'd be like, oh, this is getting old. But yeah. If you have the heartbreak song and the pop song and like all these different emotions, then I feel like it's much more not only relatable, but also enjoyable. Mm-hmm. So I would love to hear about your process of creating. I know you said you make music.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so my first project is called Tsunami. And it was entitled that because it was a tsunami of emotions. When I wrote that, at least that's how I felt. And it was my first EP. And I wrote that album over a span of 10 years. So the oldest song on Tsunami, which song is it? When did I start? No, I didn't write it over 10 years, or did I? Oh my gosh, I'm drawing a blank. That's what it was. So I had, when I lived in Chicago, I used to sing background vocals. I was a background vocalist for an artist, and she was an international artist, very beautiful spirit, and loved it. So this was like around 2009 or 10 when I started singing with her consistently and gigging all over Chicago with her. And I remember telling her, I was like, yeah, I want to sing. I want to share my voice with people. I'm always writing in my journal. I always have a journal very close nearby because I never know when the muse is going to write through me. And so I expressed that intention in 2010. That's where the 10 years come from. I expressed that to her in 2010. And what I didn't realize was happening was that I was literally working on music in that time, even though I wasn't physically working on music, but I was going through the experiences that would lead to the songs that I would write. I think that's the part that people don't always think about when they're creating music or the receiver of the music, is that sometimes this song has been 10 years in the making. After I started singing with her in 2010, the next year I moved to California, and I didn't sing at all unless I was facilitating a workshop with the girls who I was working with at the time, and then ended up going to a songwriting camp down in Orange County, and I loved it. And we were given this track. So normally how I would write was that I would just hear melodies and I would hear lyrics and I just write them down. But this was the first time we were given a track to write to. And I was looking at listening to this track and I'm just like, I'm vibing with it. And I was like, what does this want to say? And then I just started to channel what I was feeling at the time. Here I am. I think it was like by this point, 2012 or 2013, 30, 31 years old. I'm at this songwriting camp surrounded by people half my age, 15, 16 years old. I'm dealing with these thoughts of, I'm too old for this. Maybe the boat on me writing music and breaking into the music industry has sailed. Maybe that has passed. I need to grow up and do something else. This is the conversation I'm having with myself, feeling all types of insecure. There was about four women who were either late 20s or early 30s, and they had grouped us all together into this songwriting group. So I already felt a certain way. Hey, they didn't even put us or mix it up with some of the younger people. They just put all the old fogies over here. This is what I'm thinking. And I'm only 31. This is what I'm thinking in the moment. And then I'm being confronted with all these insecurities. And then as I'm seeing all of this, literally, the words start coming through. I don't know if I'm ready, but what's the use of staying here? And I was like, oh, it's a song. Literally, Metamorphosize, which is one of the songs on Tsunami, was written in a space and time where I was questioning myself and questioning, is there space for me? Is there room for me? And for people who know me, and as people get to know me, and as I share with people that about, is there space for me? Is there room for me? That has been a big issue for me. That's been one of my life lessons. That's been something that I've dealt with throughout much of life. I'm like, oh, I sing, but there's a lot, there's enough people singing. Oh, I write, there's enough. Is there even room for me? Will I even be able to make an impact or make a difference? And so there was a time in my life, I want to say probably mid-20s to early to mid-30s, where I was working through that particular life lesson. And it was funny how Metamorphosize came up as a response to that. It was very interesting, but it was literally something that I was moving through in that moment. And so that's an example for one song. So I would say I can only write from what I experience. Everything that I write is because I went through it or I experienced something that inspired that song. I'm not one of those people who can sit and be given something to write about if I can't connect with it. It's like I have to be able to draw from personal experiences to be able to, I feel, to be able to authentically do the song justice, which leads me to another song on my album, Soul. And Soul, like I tell people, that song was channeled through, and it was written through me by my father. And my father made his transition when I was 8 years old. So from 8 to about probably around 30, 31, when the song was written, I was very upset with my father. And I had been doing work in my 20s around healing that relationship, those abandonment issues that I faced as a result of my father's passing. And especially as I was beginning to understand death more, I was able to resolve a lot of that anger that I didn't even know I had. What happened was, I want to say around my 33rd birthday, I wrote my father a letter and I told him I didn't want to be mad with him anymore. And I was like, I know that your energy, just because you're not in your form anymore, doesn't mean that you'd ever stop being around me. And I said to him, I miss you. I was like, I need you. And I want to have a relationship with you. And it was really interesting because as I was writing it, I just was crying and I felt so good. And I felt like it was received. And I started to feel like a shift. Like I felt like there was this presence with me. So I knew it was my dad. And I want to say, not even a year after writing that letter, I was getting ready for a photo shoot and there was a young man who was doing my makeup. I had never had a male makeup artist before. And as soon as he touched my face, the words of Soul started coming through.
Wow.
And I didn't have my journal, so I reached for a receipt. And I started writing down on the back of this receipt what was coming through. And when I actually sat down and read the lyrics, I was like, this is my dad responding to my letter. And so that's how Soul was written. But again, it was work that led up to me even getting to that point to be able to say, tell my dad, I need a relationship with you. I need you. I had to invite him in because I feel like he's always been around me, but I was so upset with him for leaving me. But yeah, so that's another example. With my music, honestly, I describe my music as very emotional, and other people do too. They're like, yeah, I can feel good in one moment, but then you got me thinking in another one, then you got me sad and crying in another, then you got me in love in another one. But that's, I want it to be honest and authentic to our experiences and the experiences that I've had and experiences that most other people can relate to. It's a journey. It's a roller coaster. It's wild. It's crazy. It has many surprises. It can be scary and it can be beautiful all in the same song, but that's what life is. Yeah. So I don't know if I answered your question.
you most certainly did. Yeah, that was beautiful. Thank you for your vulnerability and for sharing all that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, celebrating the beauty of the human experience. Yeah, I think that that's in between point that I've been learning how to embrace more and more, because I feel like the way I kind of view things right now is that the masculine energy is like spirit and the feminine energy is earth, and the meeting of the two is heaven on earth. And when I study a teacher like Yogananda, who is all about, who I love Yogananda, but he's all about escaping the Maya, right? Everything in this plane is fake. And I'm like, but are you enjoying yourself? I appreciate the wisdom, but are you actually enjoying being here? It's not just getting somewhere else. And then the more feminine path, I think of as a more like sensual and like tantric path where everything can be seen as divine and interacted with in that way. But as we were just talking about earlier, it's easy to get attached and addicted to things without a certain level of awareness and detachment. So you have to have that sweet spot between enjoying what's here, but also tuning into the essence of what the thing is and not like the manifestation of the thing, because the manifestation of everything is going to go. Right, those are just different creative expressions of the divine. Like, we're all creative expressions of the divine, so we can't be too attached to this body, whatever it is. And like I was saying, I was doing that 5 hours of sadhana every day, and I was feeling great, but I was also like more in the spiritual realms. And then when I came, I just got back from Disclosure Fest last weekend in LA, and that was the first festival I had been to in years because of COVID. And everybody there was just on the wave. Like, everybody there was on those high vibe, good intentions. Let's have a good time. Let's learn. Let's heal. Let's grow. And having that embodied experience shared with so many other like-minded souls was so profound. And I was like, ah, like, I'm really in the sweet spot in this moment of recognizing the underlying essence, but being present and grounded in my body. Yeah, I'm just celebrating that time. And I feel like you've had a lot of transformative, deep experiences, and you've been transmuting them into music and to leadership roles. And I know you also write as well. I would love to hear about that. But I feel like this is the purpose of being human, to have our experiences and to do and express our personal experiences in a way that other people can feel and relate to. And it makes them universal.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. I just wanted to circle back to your 4 to 5 hour practice, your sadhana, because I am the same way. I think at minimum right now, my practice is 2.5 hours. And it's normally because I have a 30 minute call with one of my teachers in the morning every day. And then there's I practice Kundalini yoga. So I'll either do a full Kriya and meditation, which can easily be 90 minutes just on its own. And if I don't do a Kriya, then I'll do a meditation, which is about 30 minutes. And then I'm reading A Course in Miracles, or right now I'm reading The Magic Presence. I'm reading. So when I look at my time, wow, that's like easily 2.5 hours. But it's like, it sets me up so beautifully. And because where I live right now, I'm in the mountains in Ojai at the time being, I get to watch the sunrise and I get to watch it set. So what I've incorporated into the past week is being more intentional about drumming and playing my gong and my bowls or whatever, when the sun is coming up. And that has been a whole nother, it's like, it's a part of my spiritual practice that's now coming into expression, is greeting the sun as it comes over the horizon for me. Mm. And that has been so powerful. And like you say, but what I'm noticing is that it sets me up for my day. Cause now that I've started doing it, I just feel like I got the energy of the sun throughout the rest of the day. Like, I'm just like, yeah, like, like I can take on anything. And it's really interesting because I've definitely had those moments where I'm floating. Like I can tell I'm in some other realm. I'm just there. And then I have, and like you say, it's like bringing the heaven to earth and marrying the two and being able to embody it here in this experience. And I feel like I can stay in my practice all day sometimes. I just wanted to bring that back up because you had mentioned that. And I was like, I definitely know that experience, but I'm learning how to, I feel like adding the sound is helping me to embody it so that I can go out. It puts me into action. It puts me into that divine masculine principle of acting. Otherwise, I'll be in the feminine where everything is possible and potential and love, just floating. But the sound, even though sound is the feminine principle too, and the light is the masculine, but I think because I'm drumming and gonging to the sun, it's like something about that sun energy, that masculine energy is like helping me to ground and get moving so that I'm not just sitting there for 5-10 hours. Oh my God, I am blissed out from what I just read. So,
yeah, I feel you. And thank you for that reflection of the gong to the sunrise, because that does sound really powerful. And I feel like the analogy or the visualization I was getting when you were talking about that is, when we do sadhana for so long, it's almost like climbing a mountain to a certain height. And almost like the longer you do the sadhana, the higher you're getting. And then when you decide to stop doing the sadhana and going about your day in like the 3D world, you're taking that energy with you. So I feel like it's like jumping off that mountain on a hang glider. And you just float down and you're just like, it feels good. And things, and they happen, but you're like, oh, it's cool. I see that. Yeah. Yes. It's a beautiful thing. Yeah,
it is. It truly is. It really is.
Yeah. I feel like we're going to wrap up shortly, because I like to give myself space to process everything that was shared. And you definitely shared a lot. But if briefly you'd be willing to share about your writing, I would love to hear about that.
Sure. I tell people I was born with a pen in my hand. Oh my gosh. I was going to say, before I was even singing, I was writing. That's not true. Because the first song I sang, I wasn't even walking yet. So it was Michael Jackson and Paul McCartney say. That was my jam. That was like the first song I sang. But anywho, writing is something that I have been fascinated with since I was probably 4 or 5, right when I was starting to learn how to write. And I was thinking about this a couple of days ago, how Susan Taylor, brilliant, beautiful Black woman. She was a major contributor to Essence magazine in the 80s and 90s, and even the first couple of years of the 2000s. But she used to write this column called In the Spirit. And it was just this beautiful column. And I wish I could remember the details around how I even knew to read this column at 5 years old. But I was learning how to read around that time. And for some reason, my spirit, my little 5-year-old self, was drawn to this In the Spirit column that Susan Taylor wrote. So I learned and perfected my reading from reading her columns. And her columns were literally like the title, In the Spirit. She was talking about things that, even as a 5-year-old, just touched me and inspired me and left seeds within me. It was very inspirational. It just left an imprint on my little 5-year-old's heart and soul and subconscious. And I remember being inspired by how she wrote. It was very poetic how she wrote, the way she was able to make a point and deliver it in such a poetic way, yet it will inspire you into action. And I remember following her lead. So everything that I wrote, I wanted it to inspire people. I wanted it to have people feeling good. I wanted it to move people into action. So I've been writing since I was like about 5, 6 years old. And I honestly feel like it's just one of those gifts from previous lives, to be honest with you. I ended up focusing on journalism when I was in college. So I started out as a broadcast journalism major, and then I switched to print journalism on the guidance of some of my teachers at the time. And then after I graduated from FAMU, so I went to Florida A&M in Tallahassee, Florida. And after I graduated there, I had my first job in Wisconsin as a copy editor, even though I applied to be a reporter, but there was a hiring freeze and they could only hire me as an editor. So I did journalism, but I realized, like, I was like, that wasn't my style of writing, even though I'm grateful for it because I can never lose those skills. You need writing for everything. But writing initially started out as a love. It started out as a deep love and a way for me to inspire people. I've been told that I have a way with words and I have a way of writing things in a way that really resonates with the heart and touches the heart and can move people into action. And I've seen it, but I think because it's a natural extension of me, sometimes it's easy for me to overlook it because it's just so natural for me to do. And with that, I would say it's in recent years where I'm starting to really see the value, I guess you can say, for lack of a better word, of the value of my writing and what it brings. But yeah, so I write music now instead of doing some more of this investigative journalistic. I do a lot of writing. I tell people I'm a pen. So these songs write through me, these poems write through me. The two books that I've published, they wrote themselves through me. And I'm currently pregnant with couple more offerings, which I'm very excited about, a couple books that I'm very excited about, actually. So I just tell people I'm a scribe. I'm a divine scribe. That's how I look at it. And I'm also a divine pen. So whenever there's something that needs to be said, and as long as I'm tapped in and tuned in and listening, it comes through very clearly. And so that's actually it's an extension of my voice. My voice is an extension of my writing. My writing is an extension of my voice. So they both go hand in hand. And there's a lot of writings that I haven't even shared with people, but I feel like over the next several months and years that I'll be sharing more of that part of me in a very, because it feels like it's, I hope that's the question.
That does. Yeah, that's beautiful. It's amazing that you have so many gifts and so many different forms of expression. And I've tapped into some of them, but I'm looking forward to exploring more. Yeah, thank you.
I'm excited
thank you for
to share.
This. Yeah. Well, I appreciate your service and your generosity with your time and your vulnerability about all the different things that you shared. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me. Thank you for extending this to me. It's such an honor. And I was super excited. I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. I just felt like it was going to be a cool conversation. Because even when I met you, it just felt like I know him. Like it was a soul recognition. And it was just a matter of us catching up to now, because I know you, like, and that's what it felt like. That's what it feels like. So I'm grateful for the reconnection, and I'm grateful that you extended this to me. So thank you.
Yeah, I feel the same. We're just getting started. Yes. So if people want to connect with you for any of the different things, offerings, pieces of art they may want to buy or tap into, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yes. So my website is shewhobuilds.com. So shewhobuilds.com. Also, my Instagram is @shewhobuilds. I have a Twitter, but I don't. So no. Instagram and my website is the best way to connect with me. Also, I didn't mention this, but I do a monthly new moon visualize, intend, pray new moon circle. The next one is coming up for new moon in Cancer. And I'm excited about that. But I do that every month. And this month is my 1-year anniversary that I've been doing those. So I'm excited about that. But yeah, Instagram, I keep my Instagram and my website updated quite regularly. So that's the best way to get in touch.
There are a lot of ways to connect with Deanna. Yes. And we'll be connecting more soon. I appreciate you, sister.
I appreciate you as well. Thank you.
All right. Well, we'll talk to y'all soon. If you don't have your tickets to the Glow Up, actually, it's called Soul Glow now because we're partnering with Soul and Sound. Get your tickets for August 6th. Blondrell and Lizzie Jeff will be coming to light up Piedmont Park in Atlanta. It's going to be a full day of wellness and fun and dancing and healing and melanin. So come through, get you some sunshine. Tickets at dharmaglow.com. We'll see y'all soon. Peace. All right, fam, I hope you enjoyed that episode of Dharma Glow. We're here to inspire you and to elevate your consciousness so that you can live a life that leaves a legacy of love. If you enjoyed what you heard here today, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, sign up for the email list at dharmaglow.com, and stay connected. Spread the word. What we're doing here is essential to the formation of New Earth. As long as we stay connected, we can't lose. Much love. This is Dijon. I'm out.